Feminists Without Mystique, a podcast where we process politics, sex, and the unrelenting fire hose of bullshit in the news through an unapologetically feminist lens. Each week, we begin by venting about the news. We'll go deep on one important issue, call out terrible things happening below the top headlines in a segment called We See You, and then we'll end with something hopeful. And we're beginning with something hopeful today. The election!
Spam, spam, spam.
It's election night, bitches.
Some good things. I hope you voted if you were able to vote.
Yeah.
Because
local elections are important.
They matter. We yell about it all the time. And we both voted. Granted, it's a vote by mail state, and we voted today, but we still did it. So
we did. We like to live on the edge.
On the edge. We've got. Well, in Kentucky, it looks like Democrat Andy Beshear, victory in the governor's race, although Matt Bevin says he's not going to concede, the Republican, so.
Great.
He's not feeling it. He's not feeling it.
God. He's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, he can go bye-bye.
And Trump, you know, was in Kentucky yesterday and was like, begging supporters, like, this is going to be really bad for me if you don't vote for him, if he doesn't win. Mm-hmm. So,
Is it going to be bad for you, John?
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh. Shucks. Also good news in Virginia.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
The House and the Senate flipped blue for the first time since 1993.
Boom, boom. It's probably like it's 1993.
Fuck yeah. So they can pass some electoral reform, make sure that those maps are redistricted the right way for, 2020 and beyond in the census.
Yes.
It's so, so, so important because now also there's a Democrat in Virginia in the governor's office too. So that is really historic, really good.
Yay.
So yeah, these are exciting. I mean, having a Democrat in Kentucky,
that
in the governor's
feels
seat,
real arousing for sure. We do have sad news out of Mississippi, but Republican Tate Reeves won that governor's race, but it was actually really close, like shockingly close. So you know, I wasn't expecting a blue win in Mississippi.
No.
But it's still kind of heartening to see how close it was. It was kind of like when Beto lost, but was so close. And
yeah.
You know.
It helps mobilize the community for the next race.
Yeah.
To see that you really do have people out there.
It can happen. And also in Mississippi, Trump and Don Jr. and Pence were like going hard for Tate Reeves. So, you know, can't win them all.
Yeah. I mean, thank goodness. And like Matt Bevin, the former governor of Kentucky, was a real piece of shit. He was a union buster. He was an abortion, like anti-abortion extremist and anti-teachers unions and just overall a real piece of work.
Bye.
Erin, Gloria Ryan, who used to write for Jezebel, I thought said, she kind of summarized my feelings on the whole election tonight. I mean, I was like dancing around for a second because I was just
good news is shocking nowadays.
Yeah. It's just nice to get some actual news that makes you feel hopeful a little bit. Mm-hmm. And Erin sort of said, she's referencing we're not going to really talk about it today, but that depressing polling that the New York Times and Siena College did where they were like, it's incredibly bleak. They were polling like the five kind of swing states that Democrats really need to win. And the polling basically was like, yep, Trump's still like pretty much beyond competitive in those states and like people like, yeah. So Erin said this morning's here's why polling doesn't work. But also here are the results of a poll that says we're a country of women hating fuckos. Episode of The Daily feels a little less bleak now. I would argue that it's important that those of us who don't want Trump to be reelected spend every day between now and Election Day 2020 alternative alternating between cocky and terrified, but never either emotion for longer than a few hours at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't know how cocky it can ever be in Trump's mm-hmm. America. It feels like we're just, like, kind of on the precipice permanently.
Yeah.
But I will try.
Yeah. You can be optimistic for a second, I guess.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, knock on wood.
But, I mean, if you're in a swing state or if you're in a state that is purple or, like, at all important, which is, like, you know, please, 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 we have a year until the election, but every vote really does count. Make sure that there are voter drives at every school so that 18-year-olds are getting, you know, at all the universities. Like, make sure everyone is registered.
Vote. And, like, if you can't vote and you're like politically minded and you're a teen, go out and doorbell. Call some people. You can still do stuff.
Yeah, you can still do stuff.
Everyone can do something.
This is the most important. I mean, 2020 is going to be the most important election of our lives.
Oh, yeah. I mean, unless we all just get nuked.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But. Well, that's nice.
Hey, just to, like, shit on your parade.
Yeah. Well, also, the election could totally be hacked, because another thing that happened today was, like, the joint message from, like, all the different intelligence departments at the U.S. said that it's highly likely and that there are, like, coordinated attacks and they're trying to be vigilant.
John Oliver's most recent episode talked about the voting machines, and you can hack one without any, like, devices, just going in, like, ripping, taking this thing out, putting something else in less than 5 minutes.
And that's great.
And there are also voting machines left unattended for, like, weeks at a time.
Yeah.
In unsecure locations. And, yeah, Iran took another step to enrich uranium, which is against the nuclear deal. So, like, there are, like, still bad things happening. Yeah. But also good things. So, you know what? It's all kind of a hodgepodge, and we're just gonna, you know.
It's pants poopingly stressful.
I was going to say we were going to focus on the positives, and then remembered our topic tonight. So, like, no, but there's a moment of it, and it is heartening. It is exciting. It's a little hopeful, but we can't get complacent because,
yeah,
anything could happen, and there are so many unknowns.
Yeah.
And plenty of spooky knowns, so.
Yeah, and there's so many people who, apparently, according to the New York Times polls, don't really think that Trump's, like, doing a bad job and aren't into the whole, like, even learning about the impeachment hearings. Mm-hmm. I am kind of at a loss for how to, like, deal with those people because, I don't know how to approach people who aren't open to fact-based reporting or, like, real information.
Yeah, and it's hard because it's, like, some people you also can't, like, emotionally really pander's not the right word, but sort of emotionally get through to either because you have different value systems. And so it's hard to find any way to get through to certain people if you can't go through either one of those routes.
Yeah.
Like, what do you really do? I don't know.
Apparently, a lot of people still don't even know of Elizabeth Warren, which is,
I mean,
hard.
What rock?
I Especially, guess lots like, of rock. Like, yeah, lots mean, of places full of people under rocks.
I guess we live and exist in certain circles and politically minded bubbles, but, like, the age of social media, I'm still surprised, but who knows? My Facebook feed is geared to me.
Yeah.
Like, the news, maybe they don't read the news, but even on Fox News, I don't know. It's beyond me.
It's hard. It does feel like one of those pieces of information where, someone goes out on the street and is like, do you know who the vice president is? And people don't know. And it's like,
yeah.
What?
Like, how are we what?
So, I guess... just really starting from the beginning in some cases. Because I think even you and I, when we talk, sometimes I wonder, I always, like, waffle brain. waffle between are we providing too much information mm-hmm. or not enough information? Is the information like basic and people already know it and we're yeah. just having a conversation people have already
yeah,
had?
Just jerking it off.
Just jerking off
with our voices.
Yeah. Or is it use like, I don't know, useful and it is new information or new ideas that people haven't heard? I don't know.
Let us know. DM us.
We're at feministwithoutmystique@gmail.com. Ooh. Or you could, you know, at FWM podcast. Mm-hmm. Oh, we didn't even say reminder to rate and review. I was so excited about the election. I jumped right into it.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
I think we're at 49 reviews on Apple Podcasts, and I would love for there to be like a 50th review.
Yeah. Ideally, just, not a troll, but like, be honest.
But yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah. I know. I'm going to say I want 50, and then someone's going to be like, fuck you.
Yeah. Woman thinks she can have a platform. One star. I wish I could give 0 stars. Fuck her.
Says too much. Yeah. Does she even know what the fuck she's talking? Whenever I do like a hashtag on Instagram, the first view for feminism is like, feminism is cancer. Feminism is for bitches. It's just like, okay, well, the internet's right. A really scary place.
Just put on your sunglasses and keep watching. The internet is, yeah, it's, there are some people with some hateful beliefs, for yeah. sure.
For sure.
Really don't think women should have, like, voices
yeah.
or opinions or rights or, like, any yeah. of that jazz. Because sometimes we talk in upspeak, so.
Vocal fry, bitch.
Vocal fry. Listen to me. Anywho, this week. These feminist bitches, we're going to dive into sort of as to what you were saying about how sometimes we talk about things and we're like, well, what? We make a lot of assumptions about people's, you know, understanding, or even some things like we could do some more research on. So we talked about healthcare a lot. Everyone mm-hmm. talks about healthcare in this election cycle. Elizabeth Warren's got her big new plan, which we'll talk about later in this episode. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about the healthcare system in this country. Like, why is it, what's fucked up about it? Why isn't it working? What is Elizabeth's plan? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Because we all know it's bad, or some of us feel like it's bad, I guess.
Yeah.
But there's plenty to dive into. I mean, just gonna get rolling.
Get it started.
Just gonna like get it started. Pop this cherry. Gross. So
yucky.
One thing, there are a lot of things that are unique to our country in terms of our healthcare system in a bad way. One thing is that it's gotten better since Obamacare. There are a few things that Obamacare accomplished and did improve upon, kind of started a path towards better health coverage. But we have a very high rate of uninsured people in this country. Mm-hmm. I would say in part that's probably because about half of people are like $400, like have $400 in savings, and that's it, paycheck yeah. to paycheck. And so if that's the case, and you have your monthly premiums, plus the fact when you go in to see someone, you have to pay a shit ton of money. Mm-hmm. People don't get insurance, and there is literature and research that, which I think is pretty common sense, but always down for some data, mm-hmm. that having insurance lowers mortality. Like, mm-hmm. it's the equivalent to a public health intervention, the experts say. So we need people to have insurance.
Right.
And currently, with how the system is, there are so many people that don't have it. Mm-hmm. In 2016, it was about a tenth of the population, yeah. usually because they couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. And that's not a thing people in places like, you know, the UK, Switzerland have to worry about.
Yeah.
But we do.
Yeah, it's and states with conservative governments are always loath to expand Medicaid. Mm-hmm. They don't want to acknowledge, you know, undocumented worker rights. Mm-hmm. And just generally kind of obstruct any administrative action or any legislative action that's trying to put government resources into and like infrastructure plans in place to try to help people with lower the cost of healthcare and mm-hmm. help with making preventative healthcare more accessible.
Yeah. It's important. And in speaking about why, I think most of us can agree, and if not, I would be very interested, why not, that our healthcare system is expensive as fuck. Mm-hmm. There are a few reasons for this. We've got, so like for instance, there's a heartburn medication called Nexium, and the exact same medication is $215 here, $23 in the Netherlands. And that is, I mean, you can pick out pretty much any drug, any medical device, and you're going to find, like, a huge disparity. You can be, like, admitted to the ER for a minor injury and end up spending, like, thousands and thousands of dollars. And the pharmaceutical companies, the medical device companies, the insurance companies, like, prices get hiked up, and there's no real... There's this idea of like free market and competition, which does not apply to healthcare because one, it's something that you can't go without.
Right.
I mean, you can be lucky and be like relatively healthy for a long time, but it's something that you need. And there's no real way to sort of price shop around. Like you're not, no. When you're admitted to the hospital, they don't tell you, hey, these are the options of treatment. This is how much they cost. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, doctors are paid for quantity, not quality of care. So they're incentivized to overtest and to overtreat because every service that a doctor provides, they typically get a sum of money per service. Mm. So it behooves them to make your care more expensive, to add more tests and things. And then one of the other sort of major points in terms of how expensive shit is administrative costs. Mm-hmm. Because of all the insurance companies, all the billings, all the claims, all these things that go on in our broken system, there are, for every three doctors in the United States, there are two administrative staffers to handle all the paperwork, and that is unique to the U.S. system. And we also waste money on medication. So of the $765 billion wasted each year, about $210 billion of that is spent on medicine we don't need. There's an example in a study I read about prescribing antibiotics for acute bronchitis, which is just not practice. It's not what you do, but it's something that used to be taught. And so this is just something that's happening. Wasting money isn't helpful in healthcare, and it's just jacking up costs.
And with antibiotics, people prescribe it, I mean, sometimes just because it's going to make a patient, like, feel better.
Yeah.
And that contributes to the huge issue of antibiotic resistance, which is going to be, like, a growing, huge
that
issue.
That might kill us all, too. There are lots of things.
Superbugs. Look into it. It's scary.
It's spooky. If you're not nervous enough about the future, add it to your list.
Ugh. And it's frustrating that doctors have to spend so much time also on the phone with insurers mm-hmm. and trying to like negotiate and sort these things out.
Takes up their time.
Like, so inefficient. I mean, when you think about really like healthcare providers on mm-hmm. a very basic level, I mean, not healthcare providers, insurance companies, it actually, and this may seem overly reductive, but every time I think about it, it's sort of like, how did this scam ever get started? Like, why they're really like, there shouldn't be this system that's in place in this country. Doesn't make sense that you would be denied. I mean, it's very simple and kind of like a Pollyanna-ish question, but it does sort of, it's so galling because it's a system that, I mean, took time to basically like construct and we all are forced to pay into it.
Yeah.
And it's something that should be a human right. I mean, fuck this.
Yeah, it's like, what is the idea that if someone's sick, they deserve to get sicker and die if they don't have a certain amount of money?
Yeah.
Like, that is some individualistic ass American shit right there. Like, let's.
Yeah. Or like, and then if, okay, so you're, you know, I'm trying to think of like conservative argument, like, well, they can rely on like churches and charities and like, you know, it's, this is really gross.
Yeah. And no, you can't. There aren't unlimited funds. Like, you know, there's no guarantee with that. Like, you can hope that you can. It's so sad how many GoFundMes exist now. And it's wonderful that people contribute to them.
Yeah.
That there is that platform for people. But the fact that people have to take to the internet and ask their Facebook friends for help with their like private medical issues is really fucked up and sad. And we're also with all this money that we spend on healthcare in this country, we're not providing good healthcare.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth Fund is a nonprofit that ranks health systems of various developed countries, for lack of a better term. And the lowest performer has been the United States for the past 20 years, even though, again, we spend the most.
Yeah.
We don't have great, we have a high rate of people dying under, like, preventable deaths, accidental deaths in care, like, missed prescriptions, all manner of thing. And that's not the case everywhere. It's not so bad. Our maternal mortality rates, we've talked about
trash
before, are a fucking travesty.
Yeah. Like, the fact that in addition to having, like, poor primary care, we also, as I think I'm also looking at something from the Commonwealth Fund, that we also don't invest in social services. So like home visitings, or like home visits and housing and subsidized healthy food, which I find fascinating and something that I want to like spend an episode at some point on, like all the food deserts that exist. I mean, access to like healthy food, safe, clean water and like safe, clean housing can help with chronic illness and help doctors help. It could be just the system could just be made more efficient if we took a more holistic look at what healthcare actually means. And what could be covered and what should be invested in. Also, we have a low, we actually, our life expectancy in the U.S. has gone down, like, for the first time since, what, like, the 1960s, I think I read somewhere, like.
Yeah, which is, like,
That's, I mean, the fact that there's also, like, there's, I think it was UW's, like, School of Public Health that put this out, and I meant to send it to both of, like, to you. You can even look at someone who lives on Mercer Island. So this is sort of like localized to Seattle, but Mercer Island's like a rich suburb of Seattle. And someone who lives in, I think they said like Burien,
probably
like somewhere down there. And even though it's only the span of maybe 20 miles, the life expectancy for a man like of the same age in the same age range would be, is like, the discrepancy is like 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
Which is
huge.
Really crazy for like, you're living in the same state.
Yeah.
Within 50 miles, a 50 mile radius of each other. I mean, yeah, that's.
That's not how it should be.
Yeah. And we're not even in this episode going to get into like, I mean, the discrepancies like between races, but there's like the concept of weathering, which I find depressing as fuck, where like the life expectancy for Black people is like significantly less. And part of that is like because of just like the like physical and emotional toll of all the racism that structurally happens and then happens all the time. Like, it's just baked into your life.
Constant barrage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That sucks.
Stress is not good for bodies, and we're awful. We're awful to people that aren't white as a whole in society, so that makes sense. And it's just, if we had something like Medicare for All, there would be an incentivization for the government, because they want to spend less money, to offer preventative care.
Yeah.
Which is something you had talked about a bit, and it's just such common sense. Like, if you are pre-diabetic and maybe you don't realize it, or maybe you have some weird symptoms, but you don't have health insurance or it's not good, so you're not going to go to the doctor and you keep putting it off. You're instead of getting, like, nipping it in the bud, getting on the medication you need, mm-hmm. and, you know, taking care of it, it gets out of control, and then you're in an emergency situation, which is going to be way more expensive. You might, continuing on the diabetes example, I guess, you might have to have something amputated. Mm-hmm. You might be going into a state of shock where you might not make it. Like, it's just things escalate when you don't treat them, mm-hmm. because your body can only compensate for so long. So it's like, when you get in early, it saves money. And of course, there's also the human aspect of someone not having to suffer, but
yeah.
you save money when you do this. So, like, can we just do it? I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, you and I both have had issues where we're like, okay, well, it's stressful to deal mm-hmm. with this, so maybe it'll just go away.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think lots of people experience. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's not, spoiler alert, it doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away. I don't. Yeah. There's a time where I tried to, I was starting to get a... My ex had a gross dick. Anyway, he just didn't, like, wash it properly. Oh. Long on the list of issues with him. Current partner, great dick. All right. Anyway, so there was a time where I started to feel a UTI coming on, and I was able to... Don't do this. Oh, I was able to just, like, chug all the fucking water. And, like, beat it, basically. Ew. Because I got in early enough and was just, like, flushing my system.
Oh, my God.
But the next time I tried to do that, I ended up in the hospital with a kidney infection.
Oh, you my know? God,
But it
yeah.
was just, like, I don't want it. And at that point, I had health insurance, but there was still, like, co-pays and all that shit.
Yeah.
And I was very paycheck to paycheck. But it ended up being, of course, a lot more expensive because... Instead of just, like, a simple round of antibiotics, I'd have IV antibiotics and painkillers and hospitalization and all that shit.
Yeah.
You know, and now I don't have health insurance, and so that's always fun. You yeah. know, when you start to feel kind of weird or sick, and you're just like, oh, okay, don't escalate.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? You know? Yeah. It's fucked.
You're like, can I fix this with, like, lemon water?
Yeah.
And a bath?
How can I fix this?
Natural remedies.
It's shitty. And even with, like, some of the private insurance companies, they don't even cover everything, or they don't cover, like, no. dental, which is you need, and it's like dental health is linked to heart health. There's so many things. Like, yeah. God, can we just take care of people and not charge them money for... You know, healthcare.
Ugh. I know. Another fun thing that just makes no sense to me, but in a way that I guess I could Google, but it also still probably makes no sense.
Siri.
Hey, Siri.
Alexa. Some woman robot.
Yeah. I actually don't know why we separate out, like, optometry mm-hmm. and dental care. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I get that they're, like... kind of separate systems, but, like, they all play into the same
They're all human thing. Body parts.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we still, like, we let dermatologists be, like, I don't, it's stupid.
So it's funny that we're like, dental care, that's its own fucking thing. Enjoy
Oh, teeth?
Not.
No, you don't need any of those, silly Billy.
That's optional care.
If you're having a heart attack, maybe I'll help you.
Oh, my gosh. So stressful.
Which can happen from not having good dental hygiene. Anyway.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to go run and brush my teeth again.
Well, not, like, literally have it, but it's, like, it can get into your bloodstream. Anyway.
That's great.
For another episode. All the things that can kill you. Wow. Oh. And then one thing I just wanted to touch on briefly, because I feel like one of the most common arguments I hear against it is mm-hmm. like, you'll never, if everyone's got this insurance, the system's going to get flooded. There's going to be insane wait times. No one's going to get to see a doctor, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And so there was a study of the healthcare systems in the United States, Canada, the UK, Germany, France, Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Switzerland and France are generally touted as kind of the best. And they all have, like, their different little nuances. And it's interesting to just, like, go and read about them. I thought it was interesting anyway. But mm-hmm. they compared wait room times. So in the emergency wait room times, it is true that Canada has a longer wait time than the U.S. But Canada is the only country on that list that is worse than the U.S. and in terms of wait times to see a specialist, Germany is doing better than us. A comparison of wait times for elective surgery. And so they were thinking, they had this hypothesis that ours would be really good. We'd have a very short wait time because our surgeons are paid so much fucking money per surgery. Mm-hmm. And so there's an incentive to do all these elective surgeries. Mm-hmm. But we are only, so Canada and the UK are worse than us, but not Germany or France. They're both better than us. And we're the worst than everyone when it comes to having repeat admissions. So, like, someone who is discharged from the hospital and the problem's not fixed and they have to come back, essentially, as well as deaths in the hospital.
Yikes.
Which is, like, you know, things happen, but having the highest death rate and also spending the most money on healthcare is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, spending the most money on healthcare and having, like, the highest, mm-hmm. you know, mortality rates. And we're, I mean, we fall somewhere, like, on the list of mm-hmm. healthcare, like, broadly. We are, like, near, bad. Like, we're, like, near, like, Azerbaijan, like, rocking mm-hmm. number, like, 55 or
oh,
something.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
we are low when you take everything into account. We are so low.
Yeah. It's, which is unacceptable. I mean, it really, it's not, like, and it doesn't make sense. I mean, it's just yet another, like, reason why, I mean, being run, having everyone's health, the health of mm-hmm. everyone in the country being run by a few, like, ignorant, quote-unquote, faith-based, like, bad men mm-hmm. is just, like, not the way we should be going and not the direction we probably are going. I, mm-hmm. you know.
Fingies crossed.
This is just the last gasp of a disgusting horcrux that's, like, roaring and writhing and being
roaring
awful.
And writhing.
Being awful.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, like, you know. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So that's all some bullshit. But in the theme of hope.
She has a plan for that.
She has a plan for that.
And she unveiled it.
It's been unveiled after her little sneaky deaky question avoiding in the last debate.
Yeah.
You wanna roll this fatty out, girl?
Yeah. So Elizabeth Warren released her plan last week. It keeps the promise, at least in theory, in her plan, which is going to cost $20.5 trillion over, I think, like 10 years. It's going to basically have higher taxes on the wealthy, but no new taxes on the middle class. The plan does pretty comprehensively cover everything that she has spoken about before, and she really found a lot of different places that she would trim so that to cover all of these costs for Medicare for All and for healthcare for everyone. Her plan would eliminate health insurance premiums and get rid of copays and deductibles. She would raise wealth taxes on individuals. She would have employer contributions that would normally go to health insurers, go to the federal government. One thing that I thought was really interesting was she would add more IRS enforcement because there's been a lot of research that's been done on this, but the U.S. could raise a lot more money enforcing if they enforced taxes better. And the IRS over the last few years has been seriously defunded, and apparently for every dollar you spend on enforcement, you would get six back. And for some reason, because the IRS has been so defunded, the directive that they've gotten is to focus on, like, poor people and their tax paying back, when really if they would just spend the time on, like, banks and corporations mm-hmm. and, like, rich assholes trying to get through loopholes, like, we could get so much more money. So that's a whole thing. But she does talk about how she would direct more money towards IRS enforcement of taxes. And apparently the Congressional Budget Office says if you increase IRS enforcement by 35%, you could raise $35 billion. So she kind of takes that idea. She also talks about other things that are kind of on like liberal wish lists. So like immigration reform, you'd have more workers paying taxes, cutting $800 billion from the Pentagon budget, ha ha ha, like basically like just arousing to read. And it's kind of funny that like she, for all the conservative talk about like cutting wasteful spending and, you know, she actually kind of takes that and turns it on its head and is like, there's actually a lot of wasteful spending. Like, why is there $800 billion that the Pentagon just gets in a slush fund? Yeah. Like, I'll just take that and we'll put it towards healthcare because you're asking how I'm going to pay for it. So she stayed true. There is no middle tax increase. Theoretically, workers will be getting back more in their paycheck slightly because you're not having to pay co-pays, and companies generally aren't going to have to pay more. There are some companies that might feel like frustrated based on the way that she's written her plan, but like, please, if frustration is like really all she has to deal with, and I mean, it's going to be more than that from rich people, but like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, we're humans. We're all humans on this earth. Can we take care of each other?
So that's kind of like, that's a summary. That's a nutshell.
And I liked what there's a healthcare activist, Adie Barkin, and they wrote that she is performing what is perhaps the greatest feat of public policy jujitsu that I've ever seen. it's quite a plan. I'm intrigued. I'm here for it. We also have to remember she spent so much of her career becoming an expert on like how families go bankrupt and it's medical costs. Like, she has studied this shit. She's smart. She waited until she had a plan to say she wasn't going to tax the middle class, but it seems like she found a way to do it. Mm-hmm. So yes, queen.
Yeah. I mean, I think the critics will try to come at her, but, it's kind of hard if they don't have their own plan to speak to. You know, I mean, Bernie has his plan. Warren's is more expensive because she thinks the costs are greater. So, I mean, I think that she got a lot of shit for not detailing her plan earlier. But, hey, I mean, she also thinks the plan's going to be more expensive. I mean, maybe Bernie's, like, undervaluing exactly how much. And he's taxing the middle class. You know, which, whatever. I mean, the debate is getting a lot of attention because it's one of the few places that there's like a real disparity where the candidates fall on this.
Yeah.
But I am getting, you know, a little frustrated with like the sort of Medicare if you want it plan that like Pete Buttigieg has kind of like been trumpeting on his side. It seems a little like he's like happy that he found this phrase. It's sort of irritating.
Yeah, because in April he was Medicare for all. And it's like, and it's also, I think if he changed his mind genuinely, that's fine. But I want an explanation for why, outside of I trust the American people to make the right decision. It's like, you can trust them to elect you to make, because like, just having private insurance companies is going to raise price. It's just not a, it's not a great way to do it. I mean, I would still vote for any of these Democrats.
Yeah.
For sure. And I have the preference of Medicare for all, but like one of the other plans would still be a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
We have no villains here.
Yeah.
Just preferences.
Just puppies. And I think that, you know, in light of the depressing New York Times polling that came out, I really, my rebuttal to that would be, can we please just like, everyone should vote for like the person that they actually want.
Yeah.
And then let's go from there in the primaries. Let's not think about like, who would be the best person to beat Donald Trump, because I truly think that Warren, in the same way that a lot of like fuckboys across the country think that she's unlikable, and women, actually, that was part of what was so depressing. There were a lot of women who were like, I don't know,
I just don't like her. Yeah. Okay, if you can't back that up with any sort of facts, then what are you
Yeah. I mean, I would rather have Warren, who inspires a whole lot of people mm-hmm. and gets out new voters and like leans into her progressive accolades. I would rather have her up there against Trump and just see what happens. Like, let's just see. I don't think that she would depress turnout kind of like the Clinton name did for a lot of people who just were like lazily.
No,
dude, two sides of the same coin. Really?
No, okay. They're not. It's different currency altogether.
Yeah.
But it's a no. And like, this is something we've mentioned before, but studies show people don't know who is actually electable. People think they know who's electable, but they don't. So if you're voting based on who you think is electable, you're probably fucking wrong.
Yeah.
And then you're going to, it's just vote for who you want. And then whoever the nominee is, vote for them.
Yeah.
Can we all just can we all just shake hands on that? Thank you, because I want health care. I want health insurance.
Insurance, yeah.
Give it to me.
And a better world for, like, the next gen. Okay, boomer. That's...
That's healthcare.
That's healthcare in a very rapid nutshell, but, you know.
In debt and nut.
So,
and now for We See You?
Yeah. We have, let's see. Let me pull mine up.
pull it up. Yes.
All right. Lawrence Van Dyke. Lawrence Van Dyke marks the 9th Trump nominee to receive a not qualified rating by the American Bar Association. Van Dyke is up for a seat on the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and when asked about the not qualified rating, a ranking based on 60 interviews with 43 lawyers, 16 judges, and someone else who had worked with him, he wept on during the hearing. The letter from the American Bar Association laid out that the interviewees found Van Dyke, quote, arrogant, lazy, an ideologue, and lacking in knowledge of the day-to-day practice, including procedural rules, end quote. The interviewees also found that Van Dyke, quote, lacked humility, has an entitlement temperament, does not have an open mind, and does not always have a commitment to being candid and truthful, end quote. So for a judge, that kind of sucks. He wrote a 2004 op-ed in Harvard at Harvard Law School insisting same-sex marriage, quote, will hurt families and consequentially children and society. In 2010, he filed an amicus brief to oppose non-discrimination laws. He argued that student groups at public universities have a constitutional right to discriminate against gay students. That was in 2010. Some Republicans have chosen the well-trod ground of casting themselves as the victim of a partisan system, LOL. And just to debunk that fact really quickly, the American Bar Association has been conducting interviews of judicial nominees since 1953, and they've evaluated 255 Trump nominations and have rated 97% of them qualified or well-qualified. So, of the 9 nominees that the ABA has rated not qualified, five of those judges have already been confirmed, and only 2 were denied, and now 2, one of which is Van Dyke, are pending. It's wholly unsettling that 5 sitting circuit court judges with lifetime appointments have been rated not qualified and appointed anyway. When you combine the historic obstruction of Mitch McConnell under Obama with the partisan actions of this Senate, shoving uber-conservative, unqualified hacks onto the court, there's a lot happening to be worried about for generations to come. So Lawrence Van Dyke and Mitch McConnell, as always, we see you.
Yeah. All right. So on our pod, we often reference the negative things that occur in the lives of women after they come forward with sexual abuse allegations. Today, I've got some concrete examples for you. Dina Lee Almeida says that 3 years ago, the CEO of a TV distribution firm that she worked for grabbed her and propositioned her for sex. She refused to sign an NDA and because of that was fired. As the Me Too movement gained traction, Dina decided to come forward with a lawsuit for her sexual harassment and the subsequent firing. In an interview, she explained through tears that she no longer feels happy. She says bringing her case forward has devastated her career and her finances. Clients are reluctant to hire her for fear of getting involved. And another woman, Jamie Marchi, has also received backlash after coming forward. She was a successful voice actor working on video games and anime, and when she was working with Victor Mignogna, who has a large fan following, he sexually harassed her and pulled her hair. At least six other women came forward with really similar allegations. And since coming forward, Jamie says the front door to her house has been posted online. Her fiancé's children's names have been posted online. She's been inundated with violent threats and insult, and she has lost work opportunities as a result. These are just a couple examples, but I think it's important to continue to humanize these women and to understand that survivors of sexual harassment and assault come forward despite what will happen to them, not because of it. We see you to the men who harassed Jamie and Dina, and to all those who abuse positions of power to humiliate and take advantage of those around them. Fuck you.
Ugh, fuck you. Gross. That's so fucked up. All right. We see you to George Papadopoulos. Yeah. So I read this Twitter headline last week, and it just really kind of broke me down. Disgraced Trump aide and convicted felon George Papadopoulos intends to run for Katie Hill's newly vacated seat in California's 25th congressional district, a swing district very much up for grabs in 2020. In 2017, Papadopoulos pled guilty to lying to the FBI in order, regarding his relationship with Russians, promising to deliver dirt on Hillary Clinton during the 2016 presidential race. He was sentenced to 2 weeks in prison and fined $9,500. And now, after a deliberate and disgusting political hit on Katie Hill, he plans to replace her. And this is just for the background. Congresswoman Katie Hill recently resigned in the face of an ethics investigation regarding her inappropriate relationship with a staffer and fallout from the national humiliation of revenge porn being leaked by her disgusting ex-husband to a conservative blog that gleefully published the photos. And before these photos were released, Papadopoulos actually tweeted, he tweeted something about the seat being up. I think what Katie Hill did was, and we talked about this last week, was irresponsible if she did have a relationship with a staffer as opposed to a campaign aide, because the rules are a little bit more murky about if you're on the campaign trail. That's not technically Congress's purview. But if she did have a relationship with someone separately while she was a congresswoman, that would be in violation of the new ethics rule, which I totally support because it's about a power imbalance. But I just wish that the process could have played itself out. It's super frustrating to me that Katie Hill was shamed out of politics while George Papadopoulos has absolutely no shame and is allowed to kind of boldly declare himself a candidate, while at the same time, Congressman Duncan Hunter, also a California congressman, he's still sitting in Congress, even though he's accused of not only misusing campaign funds, but engaging in five affairs. He still remains in office. So just a big old fuck you to the brazen lack of shame that George Papadopoulos has and to this system that just continues to work against women. And I don't blame Katie Hill for resigning. I mean, it's mortifying to have revenge porn leaked, but I just wish that we'd been able to see the ethics investigation play out. George Papadopoulos, we see you, and we're really rooting for you to lose.
Yeah. Hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. All right. With scientists around the world in agreement that we need to drastically increase our efforts to combat climate change, Trump is going to go ahead and do the opposite. As you likely know, Trump had said he would pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and as of today, his administration has now formally notified the United Nations that it will be withdrawing. a little background on the Paris Climate Agreement. In 2015, almost close to 200 countries signed on, and they each made a pledge to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Each country set its own specific goals, and some countries, including the United States, also agreed to help less wealthy countries pay for the costs that would be associated. We are the only country to pull out of the agreement. In signing on, we had agreed to reduce our national greenhouse gas emissions by around a quarter by 2025 compared with 2005 levels. We are not on track for that goal, as the Trump administration has tried to roll back federal limits on carbon emissions, including increasing how much pollution can be released by power plants and vehicles. U.S. carbon emissions actually rose last year.
Great.
So the short-sightedness and selfishness of this administration never ceases to disgust me. We see you, to Trump, the administration, and I hope the whole world doesn't explode.
Well, in our final We See You, we actually both did the same one.
Oh my gosh.
It is a We See You to the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
One step forward and then five back. They did rename the best foreign language film best international feature films, saying that the reference to foreign was outdated within the global filmmaking community. So that's good. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, they disqualified the first ever submission from Nigeria, Lionheart, from director Genevieve Nanji, on the grounds that most of the film is in English, but English is one of the official languages of Nigeria. So yeah. What the fuck are we communicating? Like, what are we trying to say here?
I don't know. And English is the official language. And Ava DuVernay pointed out that Nigeria, and there are also some other African nations where English is the official language. So with these rules, they could never be considered for an Oscar. So, I mean, also that would also apply to the UK,
yeah,
and things like that. But they should go ahead and revise the rules that for consideration in the international film category. I feel like it makes sense that the film just needs to come from another nation.
Mm-hmm.
So that the African nations can qualify, because it's particularly important to provide an avenue for African films to enter our mainstream, as we are woefully underexposed to realistic human depictions of life in countries that are predominantly home to people of color. I also feel like a lot of people think Africa is just like one country and not like a shit ton of countries.
Yeah.
That's a sidebar for another day.
Yeah.
Look at a map and think about it.
Yeah, and I get it. The Academy has rules, but they certainly aren't afraid to change them when big studios ask, i.e. they fucking expanded the Best Picture category from 5 to 10. They remove montages so we can see more stars like Miley Cyrus introduce things. And then they thought about cutting film editing and screenwriting from the main ceremony because, like, no one cares and it's so long for one night. Fuck you guys. Like, this rule doesn't make sense. It's regressive, it's dumb. And I also thought Nanji made that she had a point where she said we didn't get to decide who colonized us.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great.
Yeah, they speak English because the British.
Right.
Back when the British were the naughty people, now it's us.
So we should not be punishing them and reconsider that rule. And reconsider it, like, now, so that we can have that film, you know, in...
Racists must be, like, really confused about this whole thing, because they're like, wait, I always tell people that they have to speak English. Does that mean we have to, like, consider art from Nigeria? Brain explosion.
So, to the Academy, good Lord.
We see you. Cute.
And we're going to go back to highlighting important work that's done by different organizations. And tonight, on the eve of a big, good Kentucky Democratic victory, we just wanted to draw everyone's attention to the Ditch Mitch Fund.
Ditch him.
Go to ditchmitchfund.com. Mission is
pretty clear.
Ditch him. I think you can figure it out.
Yeah, we don't want him anymore.
He's a piece of shit and we hate him. And you can see basically every episode we do find a way to like make it known that he's an appalling cancerous sore on democracy. So anyway, if you want to if you want to help get rid of this horrible obstructionist who's been in the Senate for like way, way, way too long and literally only thinks about himself and not about his constituents or anyone or his responsibility or the way history will ever see him, go to ditchmitchfund.com so you can, they'll give all the money to whoever his Democratic challenger ends up being.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw them some dollar bills for sure. I don't think they have any swag yet, but
they at least they had. Well, maybe I got a.
Do you think
it was like a bumper sticker or something?
Okay,
I threw them like a couple of buckaroos a while ago.
Yeah, maybe they just do that. I just want to, you know.
I would love to like wear like a hat around all the time.
Yeah, instead of MAGA.
Oh yeah.
God. Oh my gosh, and you found something that was like a good thing, less in intent and more in outcome, but yes.
Yeah, it was.
Counts.
You know, United Healthcare is offering housing and support services to some of their most expensive homeless Medicaid patients in Arizona with a blend of physical, it's complex patients. Who cost their medical expenditures cost more than $50,000 a year. And it's kind of crazy, but interesting that they're using, like you said, fact-based data that suggests that if people are like have somewhere to live and access to like some regular preventative care, their costs will go down. Stability helps. One patient cost $12,945 a month while he was living on the streets, and after he got into housing, his expenses dropped to 2,000. So that's a drop of 10,000 a month. So this is just kind of ties into what we're talking about for this episode, which is if we actually invest on the empathetic human side and on the preventative side and try to actually lean into social and structural resources for people, the results can actually be life-changing and also save companies money. So it actually helps the bottom line for a lot of companies.
Yeah.
So who the fuck knew?
Good. Yeah. Good. Doing good things.
So it's a good thing. Yay. And maybe people will take something from that.
That'd be great. Also, if anyone knows, you know how in the winter and late fall your nose gets really dry on the inside? If anyone's any life hacks for that outside of like just like putting lotion up your fucking nose, because then it creates that whole thing. I've had problems with I don't know if there's a salve someone would recommend. Just like get at me with that.
Well, that's unfortunate.
I've never found anything that really like does what I need, because lotion helps, but then you got weird, then you're stuffed up with weird. It's
that sounds
help
bad.
Me, my nose is sensitive.
We should make Mito less expensive because that's what I'm working with right now.
Oh, menstruation.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm my crampy. Sorry.
When am I getting my period? Let's check my app. Let's stay tuned, folks. 11 days left. All right, guys.
All right, guys. Medicare for all.
Ditch Mitch.
And yay, Kentucky and Virginia.
Woo! Mississippi, we'll see you next time.